Hello, Polytopians. Thanks for tuning into the Polytopian Times. I'm your host, Sam, and today I'm joined by Riley, a.k.a. Razor Z. Thanks for joining me.
Hello. Always a pleasure, as always.
Wonderful to have you on. And today, folks, we've got something exciting. We are bringing back tribe episodes now that we're in a brand new shiny meta. So we're going to relook at all the strategy for all these tribes in the new meta. And we're also going to recap on all the wonderful lore that's come out in the year since we last touched on the topic. So without any further ado, let's dive right on in. The evening sun washes over you as you rise above a steep hill, the last one blocking your route through mountains and into the crisp, neat lands of the Imperius. The mountains loom tall on either side, rocky gray slopes running up and into their snow-capped peaks far above. Below you sprawl lush, emerald fields dotted with tall, thin cypress and lumapple trees. On the lumapple trees, you spot fat, juicy red lumapples dangling, the fruit that gave their tree its namesake. Down in the middle of the plains and trees of the valley, you spot a distant city made of gleaming white marble with bright orange tiled roofs. A pleasant warm breeze blows past you as you head down the road leading you through the mountains into this brilliant city. The weather is perfect here, not too hot nor too cold, excellent for all the wild growing fruit about. After a while traveling down the Imperius Road in peace, you hear a distant rumbling, drawing close rapidly. You stop in your tracks, looking around, and spy the cause of the disturbance, a herd of black horses running wild through the trees on a diagonal course past you off to the other side of the valley. They're Mado horses, the native breed of Imperius lands, sleek, glossy black beasts with streamlined heads and ear holes instead of the external ear seen in the Chinchi breed. They eat well off the native wild-growing lumapules and form an integral part of Imperius society, the powerhouses to plow fields and the ideal mount for Imperius riders to use on raids and at war. The wild herds are a rare sight in this part of the world. Most are hunted down by Imperius citizens to either eat, use for labor, or to fight. As they near, they spot you and accelerate off, wary of any Polytopians as they prize their freedom. After they all pass and the cloud of dust kicked up during the crossing settles, you continue on your way. As late afternoon falls, the sun finally stops beating down directly on you as it slips behind the peaks of the nearby mountains and rows of cypress trees begin to line the roadside. You're coming up on the outskirts of the Imperial City now, a gleaming mass of marble sprawling out around and above you. There are spectacular plinths, pillared columns, rotund domes, and peaked roofs intermingled in the architecture, all carved out of the same white marble. The street begins to become more and more crowded with Imperius citizens and domesticated Mado horses. The citizens were resplendent, dressed in deep blue robes, and each wearing the customary ceremonial and highly practical Imperius helmet, a gleaming bronze capped with a ridge of Mado horsehair dyed lumapule red. They bustle about, headed off on errands or gossiping with friends. As you head down the main road into the city, you walk past shops and markets, two-story houses, and the occasional temple. Deeper into the city, you begin to pass more temples and libraries, and gardens interspersed in this urban forest. Looking closer, you realize not all these temples are just that. What you took initially for pious masses, or rather rapt audiences listening to concerts or watching stage plays with grandiose soundtracks within these outdoor theaters, you decide to travel close to the next theater up to better hear the music playing, which is only faintly noticeable above the din of everyday life on the street. The music is played at a strange tempo and octave, and something about the overall composite melody numbs the mind and dulls the senses. You continue to stumble forward, and as the music fades away, so does the musically induced malaise. After a few more minutes of travel, you stop and look up to the sky. Hours have passed since you entered the city, and now the pink and orange hues of sunset paint the peaks above. Your destination for the night is close, an inn you've been to before. The original owner of the inn, a Polytopian named Temus Rosica, had been a friend met in the quiet horror after a war with the Chinchi. Temus had passed away 3 years ago, but they still treat you well there. Another few minutes pass, and you're finally there, outside of the Maluzmo Inn. The staff remember you, and they get your room ready. While you wait, you order a glass of lumapule wine. It's a sweet, crisp drink with a zesty twist. The house here tended to add limey flower seeds to their wine for a little extra kick. As you finish your drink, you're informed your room is ready and you head upstairs. On your bed sits the helmet you'll wear for the remainder of your time in the city. You put it on the dresser by the bed and prepare to go to sleep after a very long day. Imperius society is based off of Greco-Roman culture. They're heavily Mediterranean in their design, from their buildings to their helmets, and even their name has its roots in Latin. And that, folks, wraps up what we've got for lore currently. So let's move on to some of the actual mechanical details of this tribe. Well, speaking about those mechanical details, let's take a deep look at some of the basics, like their resources and their terrain spawn rates in general. So, nothing too crazy with Imperius. Now, I know back in the day they used to have the default spawn rates for the game, which was just base everything, but they actually have some modifiers now. You see, they switched their terrain spawn rates with Luxador during one of the balance patches. And now they have doubled the fruit spawn, which makes sense given they start with organization, but they have half the wild animals. Otherwise, everything else is default.
Yeah, because with any good, or with almost any tribe, like if you get that good spawn rate of their, whatever they start with, like with Imperius, their fruit, if you can get that fruit, then, you know, you're set up for the first about 10 turns if you can, you know, expand.
Yeah, absolutely. Something you're set up to be able to leverage nicely. That's definitely something to keep in mind. However, it does kind of hinder you when it comes to some of those. Well, we'll talk about this in a second, but later decks. Yeah. Speaking of, they do start with organization, and let's talk about perks really quick, which is their number one perk is having a turn zero start. They have a nice strong economy, and they don't have to buy an economic tech just to grow for, like you said, you know, 5 to 10 turns. You just do that with what you get. They also, because they have organization, have early access to cloaks in the early game and mid game, which is not something that other tribes have as readily next to Quetzali. However, that does come with at least one chief drawback, in my opinion, which is harder to access and efficiently utilize tier 2 resources. So, like forestry, for example, you want to get to it, but you have to get hunting first, and you have half the wild game that any normal tribe would have. Which means it's really not viable to get that tech just for hunting alone. So it makes forestry itself more expensive. And if you want to look at farms, well, there's certainly a decent amount of them, but can't use them quite as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it becomes a bit of a pain. But overall, there's still a pretty solid tribe. Being a turn zero tribe, there's nothing to turn your nose up at. Yeah. So, yeah. Speaking of, let's shift over to strategy. I'm actually curious, what is your favorite opening with Imperius?
So with I've mentioned before my journey through getting the 3 stars in perfection, and I've recently switched over to Imperius, coincidentally, so I've gotten some refreshment on them. What I like to do is immediately just try to level up the city so I can get that extra star, and then immediately right after that is go for riders, because I'm going to want to try to get the lead on in a battle against another tribe, or get a lead on getting more villages so I can get those more resources, or try to discover other tribes near me. Because, you know what, if you're in like a 15 tribe game, you know, it's best to explore as much as possible with riders, so you can get those star bonuses. But in smaller games, you want to get those riders so you can expand as quickly as possible, because if not, you're going to be stuck, you know, behind other tribes, right? Because you're going to have less resources and you're going to deplete them, you know, very quickly. And like you said, having to spend more on forestry, that could definitely put you behind. So I think, like, kind of going for an aggressive play style in the beginning, you know, in terms of expansion, is key to being successful with Imperius.
Absolutely. You know, here on the Polytopian Times, as we've said for quite a while now, our slogan's ABE, and that stands for always be expanding. And it's either your economy or your territory or your techs. But definitely, you want to be growing in one way or another. And Imperius, definitely, they emblemize that at this point. Especially, again, because of that choke point there. I mean, farming, it's their most obvious tech, like tier 2 tech, if you're going to move up past, say, organization and roads, you know, for some different level ups, because you're lined up for it, but there's usually not enough farms to do many level ups. You might get one level up like on level 4, level 5 if you have one or two farms in a city, but not even all cities are going to have some. Some might have just none because you just have the default rates, which is very a lot more random. The decreased animal rates, meaning you're not going to be going for forestry all that often, and if you do, it's going to cost you a lot more than it would, say, barter player. Mining's going to be nice and lucrative, but again, you're going to have to go out of your way to go and get that sort of tech, and it might not naturally benefit you early on when, like, other tribes might be moving towards their lumber huts or mine equivalent.
Yeah. The early access to cloaks does kind of help, if you think about it, with expanding. Because if you're playing, like, a crazy match or even in a regular multiplayer match, most of the time, if you run up on another tribe and, you know, try to go through or even just get close, they're going to, you know, try to get the jump on you and, you know, go straight for the attack. So, you know, with a cloak, you can, for one, you know, get that early advantage like we talked about last episode with getting behind enemy lines and stuff like that. But also it could be useful for exploration because unless they discover it, you can just keep going and, you know, find as many, you know, tribes and or resources or, you know, whatever you're looking for without getting, you know, exposed and start a, you know, early war if you're not prepared for it. So, you know, I think that's another one of their saving graces.
That is definitely something that's good for them. And I think down that road, one other thing that they have, and this is only in FFAs or team games, it has to have multiple players in it to be viable, but early game embassies, it's a great way to make some early stars per turn. And I mean, you get that vision on enemy rival capitals, which, I mean, you know, you can just get that with cloaks too, absolutely. But it's kind of nice if you get some stars per turn out of it. However, you do give, you know, whoever you're putting the embassy in stars per turn as well, but generally it means they're not going to tag you till towards the end. So yeah, that's you know, just something to keep in mind. Oh yeah, but, well, the other thing to keep in mind with this is, you know, like, while cloaks are super great, they do want to avoid over investing in cloaks if you spend too much trying to rush out cloaks. And especially if you do it early on in the game, you can land yourself squarely in the aggro hole because you don't leave yourself any income to focus on developing your economy, which you definitely need to do.
Oh, true.
More in the early game than any other time. And they're 8 stars a pop, so it is costly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's best to, like, maybe have one to start off with. You know, keep it slow, see how the other tribes are going to, you know, like, if you get, you know, discovered, just give up on the cloaks for a second if you're early game, because you don't want to be spending that many stars on, you know, a cloak unit when you could be, you know, wasting, because not only does it cost a lot of stars, you know, it's going to take up, you know, space in your army. And if you're trying to run with only cloaks early game, you know, you can't really do much with defense with just that.
No. I mean, for the cost of a cloak, you could get 2 riders and a warrior. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really depends on how you want to spend those stars.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely something to keep in mind. I mean, on that note, the one thing Imperius players should definitely be doing, because I mean, again, you're not really lined up for any tier 2 units beyond maybe defenders, which again, they're not going to do much on an offensive note either. So warriors and riders are going to be your best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things that you should shoot for as soon as you're starting out.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and you want to think about how you're using those two units in the early and the mid game when they're going to be the most viable and the most necessary to use, because eventually you'll replace them with swords and with probably archers and the occasional knight when needed. You know, the battlefield will evolve as it goes on and it'll become less tribe specific. Yeah. But in the early game, what you want to be doing, and this is in general, you got to put melee units out in your frontline cities as frontline cannon fodder or meat shields just to defend the cities from an assault. Or, I mean, maybe if some of them survive this, you know, frontline cannon fodder and assault defense process. You use them as cheap assault troops of your own, since you got a couple lying around. You want to put them in the frontline cities, but only spawn them there. You don't want to spawn a bunch of warriors in your backline cities and just spam out a mass of them, because it's better just to have a couple of riders that can move much faster and actually get into the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, because I try to get a combo of like one or two riders and then a warrior, because early game I noticed a lot, like the other tribes, even if they're, you know, they're bots, they're going to be trying to do the same thing that you're doing, like expanding as quickly as possible.
Oh yeah.
So if you've got the rider edge, I mean, you can, and you've got a clear path into there, you know, it makes it so you can, as soon as one of your rider dies, you can just, you know, swoop another one right in there and, you know, continue on the attack before they can just spawn another warrior or another unit to protect their city, or, you know, take out your other units that are on the assault. So yeah, definitely going for one or two riders and a warrior or two is really gonna give you the edge in that early combat, because not all tribes
want
to go for that, you know, that strategy, especially not, you know, the bots are kind of, they're getting more predictable, but sometimes they can still be unpredictable, especially in crazy mode when you don't know if they're going to be hostile with you right off the bat. I've had many games where they'll just be, you know, friendly, like, hey, neighbor. And then other games are like, hey, I like your land. Looks good, you know.
Yeah, off the bat.
Yeah, so you always want to be prepared for anything, especially with Imperius.
Absolutely. Don't trust yourself to an AI, because an AI will it'll inevitably turn on you, it seems.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, to follow up on that, so warriors in your frontline cities as a meat shield and as a quick way to get them into the fight, so they have less space to have to walk through instead of showing up in your rear cities. And in turn, we're going to use those rear cities to fart out a bunch of riders, because they're fast. They can hit things and run off, and you can make more in the rear cities. And most importantly, they can actually, it's just the speed thing, get in the fight, really. Whereas a warrior there wouldn't. Allows for a very rapid force buildup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, especially when you pair it with, like, because with Yedak, you know, they can put down the roads in the neutral territory so that they can, you know, zoom in really fast. And that's, you know, my strategy for Yedak is to put roads down. But even with other tribes, sometimes I like to get roads early on, especially whenever I've got a couple of cities and, you know, there's some distance between me and the other city that I'm attacking, is, you know, I'll throw down some roads, and that gives, you know, that'll give you a huge advantage for, you know, moving the riders in there.
Absolutely. They can zip around the entire empire there and back just to run off some daring raids. Yeah. Yeah, some cool stuff. So we've talked about some ways to do Imperius up, and I mean, honestly, past the mid game, there's not really that much that's unique to Imperius. That isn't something that's just generic for all tribes. So we're not going to delve too deep into it right here and right now in this episode. Instead, we're going to just talk about some ways to counter Imperius if you wind up playing against them. So, start off, let's think about the best way to stop a turn zero tribe. You're not going to have the option to break them down at that turn zero moment, so you won't be going for an out eco at that moment. So what you can do is try and find them early on, and then just give them a lot of pressure, and maybe try and forward settle them. But really, even if you can't forward settle them, keep them under pressure. You know, keep assault them, make them have to have warriors and stuff, make them not feel safe enough to go and rush out cloaks and feel like they can't spend the money to buy the tech and then to go and buy a cloak after that, because they need to have two warriors in each of their two cities because they feel pressured.
Yeah, because like if they're so pressured they can't, you know, do what they have to do to grow or expand, you know, they're going to be spending all of their stars on defending. So, you know, especially if you have another ally nearby, which, you know, turn zero and to five, you usually don't have any allies because it takes time for that relationship to develop in bots, you know. But some games, you know, if you can put enough pressure on them, you can get that advantage. And as you keep growing, they're going to be stagnated because they don't have as many resources as some of the other tribes do, or like some of the techs that are going to give them the edge in combat early on.
Right. You know, it only goes so far, and that's something you can definitely use to your advantage. You want to take away their edge. And I mean, yeah, just solely in an economic sense, you know, if you just stay competitive in the early game and keep it up, like, yeah, they just hit this point where they just can't tech up, and you can out tech them, you can out eco them in the mid game, and all of a sudden you're the one, you know, farting out like 9 giants at them, and they're like, I have 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's all just luck of the spawn, though, too.
Oh, yeah. Because if they have like plenty of, because I've had games where I'll get like maybe one fruit and then have to, you know, get those other techs so I can continue growing. And it makes it hard to, you know, because usually in, you know, with 15 crazy bots, you want to, there's not any villages that you can go for. So you want to go for the kill early on, you know, with the tribes nearby. And if there's, for one, hardly any resources and I'm getting a lot of pressure, I can't do anything. And most of the times I just give up. I just restart and be like, okay, well, I need to get another, try again, get another spawn and, you know, try this run again. So, you know, if you're going up against them as a different tribe in a game, that's always to keep in mind. So like if you go and try it out for yourself, you know, play around with Imperius for a bit, you get a good vibe of like how, you know, like how your strategy would be. So it makes it easy to, you know, reverse engineer that on at for the enemy side, you know. So yeah. it makes it good in competitive games too, if you're doing that, because you know exactly what they're going to try to do and how to stop it.
Yes, that's kind of crucial to have that insight into the enemy's next moves. And I mean, another helpful thing can be, you know, that again, that embassy vision on the capital is great, and just an explorer in general really helps too. So, you know, you kind of predict what they're going to do next, but you know, some definite sight always helps with that prediction. So to round out our tribe episode, well, I mean, why would we choose to use Imperius in a game versus any other turn zero tribe? Really, it's just so you can cloak bomb people early in the game, like Quetzalcoatl, but you know, with some semblance of an economy instead of, you know, having to start from scratch with literally nothing. But there's not many other reasons, to be fair and honest, compared to most of the other turn zero tribes, which is a surprise, as I thought they would be much more impactful and powerful in the new meta. But ultimately, it's just the difficulty to get to some of their tech 2 resources as quickly as you'd like, while some other turn zero tribes can just get there much faster, and then that snowballs for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think definitely if you're into that play style of going for, you know, that early rush, you know, trying to get that early expansion on and expand as quick as possible and then worry about, you know, getting all the extra techs later, I think Imperius is fun to play around with and try out, you know, before you make your decision on what you want to, you know, what tribe you want to main. Because I've noticed because I've been playing Polytopia for a long time, you know, if once you get your play style down, you want to start picking a tribe you want to mainly focus on. Because even if, you know, every tribe has similar techs, at least for the regular tribes, you know, they all have different play styles that suit them best. So I think it's overall, like being an OG player, I used to main Imperius and Almaji, and which both have, you know, kind of similar rush play styles, since Almaji starts with Riders. So it's definitely interesting to play around with an experiment, and it's a good introductory tribe to get into that rush style. That's my opinion on them.
Yeah, they're a solid turn zero, and they'll definitely stay relevant, although they may not be the apex tribe we were predicting at the start of the diplomacy beta here.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps up our episode on Imperius. Riley, any plugs for us today?
Not exactly. Just my server, United Nations of Polytopia. It's on Polymain Companion Server. got some big things planned for it. We're starting to kind of gear into more of the like role-playing game aspect of it. Usually we do like, you know, all tribes in a battle royale, or, you know, do like a diplomatic kind of, you know, mode to the game. Instead of focusing on becoming number one, it's focusing on becoming, you know, more successful and, you know, being more realistic whenever it comes to playing, kind of like you're playing Civilization. And that was the goal at the beginning, but now we're trying to focus on, you know, more of the lore and story part of it, because I'm a creative person, you know, I like to bring that into everything I do. So if you're interested in like D&D type stuff or making characters or role play, you know, now's a good time to join in at the ground.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, Polytopians, definitely pop on over and give it a check out. It is listed right there. And the companion server is right on Polytopia Main. As far as our server goes, we are excited to announce the Tribe Battle Royale is going to be kicking off very shortly. We've just been trying to work through some ways to establish a set of rules so we can have the tribes participate with each other, which was the intention, to have the tribe work with the tribe leader on playing the game to the maximum esteem, so we could determine which tribe is the best of the best strats, the best everything, and which player is truly the champion. Hopefully we'll have that launch soon, and hopefully without anyone seeming like a monster on the server. Our mod staff there is doing their best to be nice and pleasant and awesome about this, but you know, there's definitely some unexpected kinks here. We didn't expect the role swapping specifically, so that's going to be interesting, because there's not really a way to stop it. But
yeah, it's definitely you know, whenever you bring that quote unquote friendly competition into a server, it's always easy to get out of hand. That was in my previous servers, that was the big catch, you know, trying to find a good balance.
Absolutely. So we got to find the right balance here. But folks, I'm very excited to announce that it is going to be launching soon. The Diplomacy beta is out. We are gathering the last player names of the last players coming out. And once we have the final in-game name, the invite's going out, and it will be starting. So
very exciting.
Yeah, stay tuned, be excited, and be excited for our next episode coming out the week after next. We have our episode on Qin Chi, where we'll be taking a look at the climbing, sword rushing Asiatic tribe, which is one of the coolest we got out there. I like the aesthetics there a lot.
Yeah, it definitely has one of the most unique aesthetics and interesting play styles. I was experimenting with it the other day, and I know it'll be a really fun episode.
Absolutely. Well, until next time, Polytopians. See ya.